Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick, joined by Dr. Eric Wallace, the president of Freedom's Journal Institute, based out of
Chicago, south suburbs.
What's the Freedom's Journal Institute?
Freedom's Journal Institute, actually the full title is Freedom's Journal Institute for the Study of Faith and Public Policy. We actually reach out to the church in general and the African American church in particular to get them to stand for what they say they believe. For far too long, the churches have talked about being pro-life, but we end up voting for people who are not pro-life. Same thing with same-sex marriage. We say we're for one man, one woman marriage, but we end up voting people into office who don't share those values and those principles.
Why is that?
Because I think there's some confusion about what it actually means to be conservative and what it means to be biblically, that your vote glorify God. That's one of the things we talk about. And we have certain principles that we try and teach folks called the RISE principles, which is responsible government, individual liberty, strong family values, and economic empowerment.
Now, Dr. Wallace, maybe I come at this issue about voting from a different direction. My criteria for voting is the candidate pro-life? Mm-hmm. And if that candidate's not pro-life, I just don't vote for him. I know there are segments of the black community where that's a priority too, but you know, you look at the voting numbers and how they vote for Democrats who support abortion. That's not the case. So where's the disconnect?
Well, the disconnect, as far as I understand it, is looking at the Bible and actually understand what the kingdom agenda is. What does it mean? Because a lot of times people will say that they vote the Democrat Party because the Democrat Party is quote, for us. What that means, I don't really know, and I think it has more to do with economics. I disagree with that totally, because I think God tells us, seek his kingdom first, and then all these other things that we need to live our life, God will take care of those. So I'm not as concerned about public policy. I mean, I am concerned about fiscal public policy. I am. But I think for too long, the black community, ever since the New Deal, when Roosevelt was trying to get more blacks to come and be a part of the Democrat Party, while there was still segregation in the South,
sure,
he used what he called the black cabinet to go out and try and get black community, and they were giving away stuff. I mean, if you really want to bring people in your community, and you see an example of this in Chicago, politicians giving away turkeys and hams and all these things, and actually conservatives doing actually nothing. So who are you going to vote for? The guy who just gave you a ham and a turkey or what have you? Or the other person saying, well, we're voting on principle, but we're not going to help you in any way, shape, or form.
I remember when I lived in the city of Chicago, there wasn't a conservative committeeman or alderman there to represent me. So we talk about the black community voting away from their biblical principles. It's in the white community too now.
Uh-huh.
We're not off the hook either, are we?
No. I think it's across the board. So it's upon us, those of us who know better, to tell others why it's so important to vote this particular way, why our vote should glorify God and instead of be at cross purposes with God. We can't complain about how bad our community is if we're continuing to vote people in who don't reverence God, who don't fear God. We need to be finding, and it's up to the Christian community also to put forth candidates who will represent us and represent the kingdom.
Okay, so how do we get started? Putting forth candidates, you mentioned that, but what do we need to be doing in our churches and one-on-one with people we know?
Well, it's getting involved in the political process, knowing, and I would put that on the Republican Party and on independents and pastors figuring out, okay, where do these people stand? I know you guys puts out a voter guide, and we need to take a look at those voter guides and see where people stand on the issues. And then start thinking about, you know, if there's nobody that's running that shares our views, at least finding somebody is at least the closest, and then start thinking next voter cycle about who we can help run for local office or trustee, for mayor, for some of these lower offices, and then start to build from there to start, you know, running for state rep, state senator, things like that. And sometimes it's going to take a while, you know, for people to reach that name recognition, so people understand who you are and what you stand for. But if we start in the pulpits, start telling our folks we in order to change part of our society, it's multi-pronged, and one of those is the political aspect, because public policy does matter. Yeah. We've had a lot of abortions since Roe v. Wade. There's going to be a lot of young kids experimenting with homosexuality since we made homosexual marriage legal. And some people look at it, because it's legal, they think it's okay, but it's not. It may be legal, but it's not lawful in God's eyes.
Yeah, it's legal, yes, but not moral. We know that. But are we starting to make some inroads? It seems like the faith community, they want to bridge this racial divide and this voting divide. Are you seeing signs of progress? Can we use the word progress?
Well, I would like to think so. You don't always, the problem with some of what we do is that you don't always get feedback right away as to what's happening, who you're touching, you know, that you've been successful in articulating a point of view. I hear back from others who already share our point of view that they're glad, you know, they're happy with what we're doing. But I don't always hear back from people who may have had a different point of view and have changed that point of view since we've been out trying to articulate our position. It would be nice to hear more of that, but I just feel we've been called to be faithful, and we just continue to do it, regardless of whether there's any progress that we can see.
Hard to quantify progress sometimes. Racism in the church, oh my.
Yes.
It's still there, right?
Yes. Well, as long as there's sin, racism is going to be one of them. Okay, so and unfortunately, you know, a lot of times it lingers in the church for whatever reason. The idea is to come together as church members, as pastors and academics and so forth, and talk about racism from a conservative point of view, from a biblical point of view, because we're tired of hearing secular folks talk about it. The church needs to lead the way. And if we can't model for the world what it's supposed to look like, what heaven's going to look like, then we're in big trouble, because we're supposed to be the ones leading the way on some of these issues. So these very tough issues.
Well, if you're a racist and you say you're a Christian, when you go to heaven, that might not be the place for you.
right.
It's going to be very diverse up there.
Right. Very, very, very diverse. And it's going to be quite interesting. And and in one sense, I can't wait to get to see what this is going to look like. We've got to start showing what that looks like here and start treating people and actually approaching it from a biblical point of view. Because I know when I started thinking, one of the things I learned from my friend, Alveda King, she said that she was running around talking about how there's only one race, the human race. And when she first started saying that to me, I didn't know what she was talking about. I thought, you know, what is she talking about? And then it finally dawned on me. She's right. That's what the Bible talks about. There's only one human race. There aren't a bunch of different races. This is somebody else's terminology, okay? Matter of fact, a lot of it comes out of the whole evolution debate, you know, that people are getting better. Well, which humans are better than other humans? Because that's kind of where we get some of this.
Those progressives tout that evolution stuff.
Right, and so it leads right into the whole idea that there are some more sophisticated than others and some better than others, where if we look at it from a biblical perspective, it says we're all created in the image of God. So how could you possibly treat somebody as blacks were treated as slaves, and then after they got out of slavery, you know, the Jim Crow South, how could you possibly treat somebody who's not only your brother, humanly speaking, but also created in the image of God?
Now, you said the church needs to lead the way on this, on racism, even in the church and out in society and our culture. What are a couple things we can do? The tangible things that we need to be doing.
Well, one of them is just how we talk about the issue. Instead of using their terminology, start using ours. So we talk about different ethnicities, stuff like that, maybe different languages, but not different races. We should probably start wiping that out of our vocabulary. Then learning how to do some things together. I'm not saying that Sunday morning should be one of the most integrated times of our life. Some people go worship someplace else because they like the music style, okay? And, you know, there are some churches that just aren't going to do a certain kind of music. I mean, there's some that want to just do hymns, and there's some that want to do, you know, other different types of worship. So sometimes people go to church not for racial issues, but because there's different kinds of worship, and they enjoy that worship. There are also opportunities to do campaigns together, evangelism. I mean, people have been coming together in Chicago, Pray Chicago, to pray for the city. And there have been various different ethnic groups, all that you can think of pastors coming together, and maybe if that's one of the positive things that comes out of the various shootings that have been happening in Chicago, then it shows that sometimes God would use a tragedy to bring people together to actually start doing what he had called them to do in the first place.
Well, this is Illinois Family Spotlight. Thanks for joining us here with Dr. Eric Wallace from Freedom's Journal Institute. We'll continue our conversation after this.
This is an important election, and the Illinois Family Institute's nonpartisan voter guide is a reliable way to find out where the candidates stand on life, taxes, and much more.
You want to be an informed voter, and the best way to do that is with the Illinois Family Institute Voter Guide.
IFI's David Smith.
The voter guide is free. Hand them out to your family, friends.
For copies of the Illinois Family Institute Voter Guide, call 708-781-9328.
Get informed about the candidates. Get yourself a copy of the Illinois Family Institute Voter Guide.
Call 708-781-9328 for the Illinois Family Institute Voter Guide. 708-781-9328. Or visit IllinoisFamily.org for an online version.
This is Michael Medved for townhall.com. In the last weeks before November's crucial election, President Trump should make bold moves to address a looming crisis that most politicians prefer to ignore: soaring budget deficits and a crushing national debt. A new group, OpenTheBooks.com, calls for a war on waste to curb outrageous spending, like squandering $1 million to prepare religions for the discovery of extraterrestrial life, or another million for sex ed for prostitutes in California. The best way to curb outrageous waste of taxpayer dollars is transparency. Open the Books suggests that President Trump immediately begin posting online every cent the White House spends and order that every other federal department do the same. Then he command that each department cut at least 5%. These executive actions would provide major steps toward a leaner, more efficient, less costly federal government. I'm Michael Medved.
Thanks once again for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. Monty Lurick here with Dr. Eric Wallace. He's the president of Freedom's Journal Institute. I go to a church that is very diverse. A lot of blacks, a lot of whites, Asians, Hispanics. Is that enough that we're just there together when we talk about the issue of racism?
We like to hang with people who are somewhat like us, okay, who share our values. You know, if you're a Cubs fan, and I'm a Cubs fan, we can sit down and talk about the Cubs and how much you love the Cubs. And
I forgive you.
You're a Sox fan?
Yes.
Oh, man. We need to end this conversation right now.
I always say, Doctor, I like the Cubs, but I prefer the White Sox. So.
Okay, well, if you're a Chicago Bears fans or Bulls fan, you know, whatever the thing is, if you're a sports fan and you can sit down and talk about sports, you want to be able to do that. So it's about having certain things in common, I think, that kind of bring us together. We don't have to be best friends with everybody, but, you know, being able to sit down and go to breakfast or get to know somebody at a deeper level than just a surface level, I think helps. Being able to love somebody as your brother. If they need something, know that you're there. Be able to, you know, supply that. As we do that within our congregations, we get to know each other better. As we do that with, you know, some churches have dinners and stuff where they have people come together. And, you know, sometimes you have to force some of it because we like to be comfortable. And sometimes you have to make people a little uncomfortable by saying, sit with somebody you don't know, you haven't met. So sometimes we can help massage that a little bit, but you can't force anybody, you know, to build relationships with people they really don't want to build a relationship with. The hope is that as you get to know people, that it starts to happen, and then as you get to know them, you'll decide, well, this person's going to be somebody you want to invite to your house for dinner or go out to dinner. And of course, if you're paying, then I'm coming.
Well, maybe my wife will pick up the tab.
But sometimes I think we can make more out of, you know, Sunday being, you know, somewhat segregated. I don't have a problem with that if we fully understand why that is. Not because I don't want to worship with white people. It's because the music over there, if it's folksy music, that's not really my type of music. I'd rather be someplace where I can stand up and clap my hands and
or
put my hands up in the air and worship. So I'm probably may not go to an Episcopal church that all they do is, you know, sing hymns, but nothing else. And I may be able to go visit. That's probably not going to be my home church for a number of different reasons. And so we have to sometimes understand, sometimes it's a little more complicated than we want to make it. Sometimes we just want to make it about color. Sometimes it's, no, it's about other stuff.
Now, earlier we were talking about voting and, for instance, voting pro-life when you say you're a Christian. We've got taxpayer-funded abortions now. Thanks to Governor Rauner's signature on House Bill 40. The Democrats approved that in the legislature. And we know with just three or four more conservative votes, we could have stopped this legislation. You'd have to say that how you vote matters. And if you're not up to date on where the candidates are coming from, it really does have consequences.
Hey, public policy, as I said, matters. And I think as we become more deeply rooted and grounded in the Word of God, you start to see that. I had a person once tell me that we're not one issue voters. And I argue with him. I said, yes, we are. Our issue, our one issue is how does our vote glorify God? And the person that we want to put in office, how are they going to glorify God when they're in office? And if you can't say that, if you're voting for somebody you know is pro-abortion, I don't care what else they're doing. If they're killing babies in the womb, I mean, what other right is there? That's the number one right, right to life.
And we know
if you don't have that, then you don't have any other rights don't count.
And we know that House Bill 40 really targets minority women. What's your reaction to that as an African-American man? Must really upset you.
It does, and it does. And I think I told you earlier that they put a Planned Parenthood and right in our backyard, basically, where we live in Flossmoor. Now, Flossmoor is still somewhat affluent, but some of the surrounding villages around are not. And actually, it's kind of right in between two high schools. So you've got a high school crowd, and you've got other minorities around in the area that they're going to be reaching out to. And we actually have organized, by the way, a Southland Alliance, to stand up against Planned Parenthood.
Do you feel like Planned Parenthood is targeting the minority community?
It seems that way. I mean, everywhere they seem to put their Planned Parenthood, there seem to be a large minority community somewhere close by. It may not be right around the corner, but it's close enough for folks to get there and to be able to get easy access to abortions. And the fact that they're using Illinois money, taxpayer money to fund this is atrocious. Because it's just going to bring more of the abortion industry to Illinois. Yeah. Because now they know they got money, you know.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. Now, you think they're targeting minorities, and our tax dollars are being used for that. That's money that could be going to health care programs that would benefit minority communities. And, you know, the list goes on.
Well, see, in the liberal mind, that is supposedly helping minorities. But in our mind, we know that it's hurting, because when women have abortions, there's what's that women's group called Silent No More. Right. They come out and they say, you know, they regret having an abortion. So we're not helping women. There's actually two victims here, and I might even pose that there's three. There's the baby who gets killed. There's the mother who gets maimed, whether it's physically or emotionally. And then there's the doctor, those who actually perform the procedure. Because at some point, they're going to have to stand before God and give an account.
And I would say a fourth. It's our society.
Oh, yes.
Because imagine some baby that's being aborted could be future leader,
right?
An innovator, a scientist, or taxpayer. Someone to help fund my Social Security and our Medicare benefits.
Right.
Think about that. Or to fill a classroom in Chicago.
A great medical doctor who would come up for the cure for cancer. I mean, you never know.
Well, now there is an effort to repeal House Bill 40. Do you think the African-American community will get behind that effort?
Wow, that's a really good question. I know there are some folks who are pro-life who actually vote the Democrat Party. I think if we really get the message out and get it out in a way so people can hear. And what I mean by that, let me give you an example. I talk about, I said the RISE principles, responsible government. We're responsible government instead of limited government, because my feeling is the shutters close, they lock their door and everything else, and you're limited government. It's like all of a sudden, no, I don't want to talk anymore. If you talk about responsible government, now we can have a conversation. What does that actually mean? I mean, what does that look like? So we need to be able to talk about the abortion issue and talk about, because people, a lot of folks will say, well, these are kids, and a lot of them are kids, having babies, and what are they going to do with these babies? Who's going to take care of them? You got all these kids around them. So we need to have not only a conversation about why these kids need to live, but how the church itself is going to help take care of these kids, how we're going to help these women do what it is they need to do, help them go to school, help them finish high school, first of all, and then help them maybe get some job training so then they can support their family. Talk about what it means to, if we say we're for one man, one woman, what are we doing to help people get married and take care of their families? So it's kind of a holistic picture we need to paint and say, we're willing to do this. If we really believe this, if we really believe there should be one man, one woman, and that young people should have babies after they get married, not before, then we can start trying to minister to folks and say, this is the model we're looking at, and this is what we're trying to do to keep people from going to abortion, keep women from actually getting pregnant. Let's talk about not having sex until we get married. How about abstinence? Wow. I mean, that's a, in this society, that's a big leap. But it's biblical, and we need to continue to talk about the biblical model. If you don't think God can do that, then there's something wrong with your faith and how you understand the Word of God. Because I believe God is able to do that and take us back to a biblical foundation that says, you know, God is first. If we really, truly love Him, then we will serve Him and we will do what He's called us to do.
I hate to jump around, but I want to hit you on one other topic before we shut things down here. Lawmakers seem bent on the idea of legalizing recreational marijuana, and this is the marijuana of today's generation that's high potency and highly addictive. It's not the Cheech and Chong marijuana we're talking about. You very well know that these shops and what have you, they're going to put themselves not on Michigan Avenue, but on the south and west side, etc.
Well, I mean, they're going to, like any other business, you're going to try and get more business. So you're going to try and get people to come and try it out and get hooked on it. Problem is that once you go from marijuana, then you're going to go to other harder drugs. That I think that's been shown, that a lot of folks will go from this drug to something else that's harder, or lace their marijuana with crack or some other substance, PCP, stuff like that. So I hate to see that happen. And you would hope that people would take lessons from what's happened in Colorado and other places where they've already legalized it. Do the wait and see. See how, now I'm not for it at all, okay? But I know that certain municipalities are looking at it because they want the tax revenue. But are we willing to sell our kids and our families down the river because we'll get some tax revenue?
Do you think the African-American community will be especially hard hit by the legalization of marijuana?
My thing is that everybody, I think, is going to get a hard hit. And I think, if you look at some of the athletes that smoke pot and do weed and so forth, a lot of black athletes, see, that was never an issue for me. And I never really hung around anybody who smoked any of that. I know it's somewhat prevalent in the black community. And matter of fact, there was this, I don't know if you remember, there was a YouTube of somebody having their kids smoke. A toddler was smoking that stuff.
I think
you
remember
that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know how much more prevalent it is in the black community, since it will probably be cheaper and more available. I would not be surprised if the black community, they have, like you said, having some of these stores in the black community and people getting high and trying to driving while high. Now, we already have problems with driving while intoxicated. Now we're going to have people driving, you know, while they're under the influence of marijuana. I mean, I don't know how you control that, really.
It's just bad for everybody. Once again, if folks would like to connect with Eric Wallace, Dr. Eric Wallace, and your ministry,
Go to freedomsjournalinstitute.org. That's freedoms with an S, freedomsjournalinstitute.org. You'll get to our website. And if they want to contact me directly, it's E. Wallace. My email is ewallace@freedomsjournalinstitute.org.
Thank you so much, Dr. Eric Wallace, the president of the Freedoms Journal Institute, and God bless you and your work.
Thank you.
A couple of notes. Before you vote, order copies of the Illinois Family Institute Voter Guide. The IFI Voter Guide is nonpartisan, easy to use, and lets you know where the candidates for office stand on life, the sanctity of marriage, taxes, and other key issues. To order the voter guide, call IFI at 708-781-9328.
and please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax deductible. Tell a friend about Illinois Family Spotlight, and until next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.